So what we're going to do today is we're going to start Perek Ches, the eighth Perek, which is on, in these red ones, it's page 26. It has a funny numbering system here. Yeah, does everyone have it? Ms. Letterman, you got it?
Ches, yes.
Ches. Sorry, 24, I mean, 24, sorry. 24. You got it there?
Yeah.
Okay. So we didn't actually completely finish Perek Zayin. It doesn't matter. There's a certain parts of here in Tanya where the Alter Rebbe sort of goes through some... I'll just give you a big summary of it, because he goes through some technical stuff about... because we're talking about what happens to the various areas of Klippa and how they're elevated, they're not elevated, Klippa Snoiga, complete Klippa and partial Klippa and so on. And how the food you eat is, he said, he ended off by saying that if someone eats a food that is klippas hatzmeis legamri, is complete klippa, although it's not kosher, whatever, then that goes down. That can't be elevated. And the effect of that is sort of permanent, unlike klippas noiga, which through tshuva can be elevated. With klippas tzmeis legamri, with complete klippa, it can't be elevated unless you've got to wait the time of Mashiach, or with intense tshuva. With intense tshuva, which is like a tshuva ma'ava, tshuva of love, which is born out of the distance that was caused between us and Hashem because of what we did, and that brings such a yearning that it becomes, in other words, the avera itself became a catalyst for the yearning and reconnection to Hashem. And at that level of tshuva, it's like what the Gemara says, that tshuva ma'ava, tshuva out of love, zdoinois nasa loike zochiois. Even averis become like mitzvahs, because the aver itself, so to speak, caused the yearning, caused the intensity of the reconnection with Hashem. At the end of the parak, it talks about some technical things where it becomes more difficult. For example, what we call biois asurois in relationships which are sexually forbidden, where the aver actually took hold in another person, especially if the person gave birth, like a mamzer was born, and so on and so forth. It's much harder then to get rid of the effect of the avera because it's already there, and so on and so forth. So we're not going to go through that now, but we'll start Perek Ches. So Perek Ches also has some technical stuff to it, but he talks about some interesting things, some very important things at the beginning. And then when we come to Perek Ches, the ninth Perek, because now that he's explained the difference between klippas noiga, complete klippa, talked about the Nefesh HaBamis, the Nefesh HaLakis. In Perek Ches, he's going to start talking about the struggle between the two souls. Right. That's what he's going to do. That's what Perek Ches is. Really is the essence of Tanya. It's about the struggle between the godly soul and the animal soul. But he wanted to take the time until now to explain it in detail, to explain the various levels of Klippa so we understand it properly. Okay. So Perek Ches, this is like sort of the end of this discussion kind of thing. Last week we learned about the word isur and heter, right? If something is a treif, we call it isur. Why is isur? Because the word isur also means imprisoned, right? And he said that if something is imprisoned, which means it's trapped in the world of klippa, which is why it can't be elevated, right? Or needs this like intense tshuva or something, right? Now what he says is, he does an interesting thing. He talks about something unique, specific about food. Food that is isur. And he says like this. Furthermore, with food that is asur, which is completely treif, which is bound up in the klippa. Shalakach nikroim b'shem isur. Which is why it's called Isur. It's called the concept of Isur. Why is that? Mipnei, sh'af mi sh'ochal maser Isur b'lohoida. It says a fascinating thing. It's getting a little technical, but it shows you the power of something being osur or mutar. Again, the word mutar again also means to be untied, right? So something that's heter, that's permissible, means it's not bound. Okay. So he says like this. Mipnei, sh'af mi sh'ochal maichel Isur b'lohoida. Even if someone ate something asur without knowing, it was unintentional. L'shem Shemai, not only that, He didn't eat it like a taiva, like we eat ice cream, you know. He ate it mamush l'shem shemayim because he wanted to be healthy, and he wanted to be healthy in order to serve Hashem, right? Lavad Hashem. B'koyach achila, he wanted to use the power that comes from that eating to serve Hashem, right? So there's a problem here, because on the one hand, he ate mamush like we said before. When we explained before how you take klipas noiga and you elevate it from klipa to kedusha, how did that work with food? When you eat something, mamush l'shem shemayim, you eat it because you want to serve Hashem. The only reason that you're eating it is because you want to have the koyach to do another mitzvah, to learn Torah, to give more tzedakah, whatever the case is. You elevate that food from the world of klipa to the world of kedusha, right? So now he ate a treif thing. He ate something that was aser, but he ate it exactly the same way because he didn't even know it was aser. He ate it l'shem shemayim. So how does that work, right? So there's a problem here. Why is there a problem? Because notwithstanding his intention, right? You see what happens like this, right? When a person takes something mutar and does l'shem shemayim, so you're taking something that is not part of klippa, or proper klippa at least, and you elevating it, or if you ate it not l'shem shemayim, you ate it just for taiva, you're lowering it, you're bringing it into the world of complete klippa, but it was originally mutar. Here we're talking about eating something for kedusha purposes, l'shem shemayim, but something that was asur even before you ate it. You understand? In other words, again, when you eat something mutar for taiva, for enjoyment, like we said before, like just for, you know, he's introducing an isur element into it. Because like last week we learned there's a mitzvah in the Torah to sanctify even the permissible, right? And not to indulge for no reason, yeah? But when you eat something that is asur, you're not introducing the isur. The isur is already there. So here you have this interesting phenomenon. He's taking something that the isur was already there, but he's eating it for kedusha. He's eating it for Shem Shemayim, right? So he says, and not only that, he says like this, V'gam po'al v'osake, and he ate L'shem Shemayim, and he implemented the L'shem Shemayim, which means not only he ate it in order to be healthy to serve Hashem, but he taka did that. V'korah, v'hispalil, v'koyach achilahi. He learned, and he ate, and he davened with the power of that eating. So he woke up in the morning, you got mamash, a person, a high madrig, is a beinoni, or he's striving to be a beinoni at least, and he doesn't want to indulge, he doesn't want to do anything, but what does he want to do? He wants to serve Hashem, but he knows he's going to have to learn Torah and keep mitzvahs during the day. And if he doesn't eat, he'll be weak. So what does he do? He eats breakfast. In order to what? To mamash have koyach serve Hashem. And it's like what happened. He went right away afterwards. He opened up a gemara. He opened up a siddur. He davened. He learned with the koyach of that food. Which, by the way, when you do heter for that, it's explained in other places that when you eat heter, when you eat something heter to serve Hashem, and you take a serve Hashem with that koyach, it makes it even more kedusha, elevated even to a higher level. Because now you taka serving Hashem with the koyach of that food, so the koyach mamash becomes a vehicle expressing kedusha, right? So here he did exactly the same thing. The only thing was that the thing that he ate was asur, right? So he says, it doesn't help. Ein hachayis sheboi oila mislabeshes betevas hatoyre vehatvila. The energy which is in that food does not come up, is not elevated, and is not enclosed, and doesn't express itself through the words of Torah in Tefillah. Kamoya heter, which would be the case if he ate heter. Mipnei isuro, because that food is bound up, it's connected. Bidei hasitra achra misholosh klipas hatmeis. It's bound up in the sitra achra, which is proper klipah, which is in the three complete impure klippas. Right? Which is a...
What does it do to him?
Well, it's a problem, because that means he's harboring, as we said before, when you have in you proper klippa, that means you becoming a merkava, you becoming the wagon for the proper klippa. It's affecting you. Which, by the way, this is just, I mean, this is, he doesn't bring this here, which is why we highlight the incredible importance of kashrus. Right? You know, they always say, the famous line that people always use when they want to talk about kashrus, they say, you are what you eat. Right? So what do you mean you are what you eat? How about if you, But if you do an experience, which is proper klipa, any experience you do obviously will always have effect on you. But the difference is, right? Klipa, if you engage with klipa, proper klipa for sure, it always has an effect on you, right? The problem is that it's different because it doesn't become you. Kashrus is different because you are what you eat, right? And the effect, that's why I said later the previous parak that you become a merkava, you become like a vehicle to klipa. Now, a person could do a proper tshuva, I mean, like, right? They tell the story of Reb Itcher the Masmid. You ever heard of the Chassid Reb Itcher the Masmid? Reb Itcher the Masmid was a Chassid who was a Chassid of the previous Rebbe and Rebbe Rashab. And he was an unbelievable madrega, I'm sure, a complete Beni of Tanya. I mean, he was like amazing, right? He was so not indulgent. He was called Reb Itcher the Masmid because he never wasted a second. He would always learn when he wasn't davening. He would daven for hours each day. Tell his seder was, he was very strict in kashrus and in mitzvahs and in, like, very unbelievable, right? I grew up, I remember my father always tell me stories about him. It's interesting. I don't know why my father picked him. My father didn't tell a lot of stories, but he always just talked about Itcher the Masmid. Itcher the Masmid, he traveled to America for a couple of times in a shlichus of the previous Rebbe. And it was a shock, a culture shock for him. I mean, he was this unbelievably spiritual guy going to a place where materialism was on the march, right? I mean, materialism, at least in those times.
Where is he from?
Russia, yeah. And then I think later in Poland. He was killed in the war afterwards. Burnt in a shul. Died al Kiddush Hashem. When he came to America, just to give you a glimpse of who he was, right? Came to America, he was in total shock. He wrote back to Europe. He wanted to describe the unbelievable materialism that exists in America. Just, it's interesting to think about nowadays, like it's insignificant. He said that what he described, what's America? He said, Khan over here, he wrote in a letter, Oichlim katleten mamish b'chol yoyim rachmanu litzlan. Here they eat meat cutlets every day, God forbid. Like such a thing, they eat meat every day? Like you know, I couldn't understand. So when he would travel in America, he never ate in anyone's house. He would just go with his own food. He would daven all day till late in the afternoon. Then he would sit down to eat breakfast and he would wash. The washing itself took him a long time to be 100% al pi halacha and everything. And then he would eat like a little piece of bread and a bit of a shtickle herring. And that was it. And that was his food for the day. And then he would sit all night and learn. It was an unbelievable person. So they tell a story about him, two stories. One, that once in Russia there was poverty and it was a big, big, big problem. There was no food and he hadn't eaten for a while and he really needed to eat. And the Chassidim were trying to get him to eat something. The problem was that at the time, I'm just telling you like how makbid he was, especially on kashrus, even a chumrah. So you know, there's something called paspalter. Paspalter means bread that is kosher, but it's baked by a non-Jewish bakery, but we know that it's kosher, right? Like there's something called Bishul Akum and Pas Akum and things like that. But so Pas Palter, halachically speaking, it's okay, especially in a place where you can't get bread that a Jew is involved in the baking. And especially if you can't get it, you can't get the bread, so it's okay. It says on Shabbos, you should try not to do it, especially in Aseret Yemei Teshuva, but it's really okay. He, not even going near it, right? So only Pas Yisrael, and they couldn't get Pas Yisrael. It was only paspalter, which is this non-Jewish bread, but it's kosher, but it's okay. He says, no. Anyway, they saw that they have to, this is not going to work, they have to trick him, because he has to eat. So they got a piece of bread, they told him it's paspalter. And so he went to wash, and he washed for a long time, and as he came, he somehow got wind of the fact, he was about to say amoitzi, and he got wind of the fact that it's not paspalter, it's paspalter, and he fainted on the spot. That's that he almost came near to such a thing, right? Anyway, this is a high madrega. But this is the idea. This is why food is such an unbelievable thing. That's what we say. You are what you eat because your body becomes a merkava because of this food, even though you ate it inadvertently, in this case. And you daven, and you learn with that koyach of that food. Nevertheless, the food cannot be elevated because it belongs to klipa. It's asr. Asr means it's imprisoned in klipa. So just to make it a little bit understood more, right? There was there's a question on this, because at the end of the day, that food is the vehicle for you davening and learning that day. So how come it can't be elevated? Bottom line is, you davened and you ate with that food, with the power of that food, right? So there's a magazine called Hatomim, which was a magazine that came out of Europe. They used to have writings of Hasidus each month to explain different concepts. And this was one of them. So this was asked, and this explanation was given. We have to know like this, that anyway, even with mutar food, which also belongs to klipa, klipas noiga, the fact that we say that when you eat klipas noiga food, like mutar food, and you daven and you learn with that koyach, becomes elevated to kedusha, that itself is a chiddush. In other words, we assume that if you daven and eat with something, then it's elevated. It's not so simple. I'll give you an example. Right? So I gave a moshul. If I think something very strongly, right? If I have a brilliant idea in my mind, now I want to get it onto paper. So what I do, I express my thought through writing, the koyach of writing, right? So my hand writes. Right? Does my hand now, just because it expressed my thought, do my fingers now start to think? Like, are they elevated to the level of seichel? They suddenly become bright and clever? No, just fingers. Fingers are a vehicle through which the thought was expressed. Understand? In other words, just because something is expressed through something else, just because A is expressed through B, B doesn't become A naturally. Understand? So in other words, this thing, if we eat kosher food, mutter food, yeah, we can understand that if we eat mutter food for the right reason, it won't downgrade the food. It won't go into worse klipah. But who said it has to become kedusha? That in itself is a chiddush, that the Torah said, right? So in other words, it doesn't affect the person learning and davening. He learned, he davening did the right thing. But he can't elevate the food for that. Instead, that's what he's saying. Okay.
But what happens to his learning? I mean,
if learning is learning. Learning is a complete mitzvah. Okay. So learning is kedusha. Learning elevates him as a person.
Yeah.
But he's still, in an unfortunate way, he's still harboring in his guf, in his body, the power of something was also that cannot be elevated out of kedusha again, unless there's an unbelievable tshuva, which is possible. People can do tshuva, even on mistakes we make tshuva. Tshuva is also for not only for intentional things, but even for mistake things, right? If it's an intense tshuva, proper tshuva.
But the learning's not in vain.
No, chas v'shalom. That's what I'm saying. It's like gave you that moshul. It's a good moshul. In other words, the if I think something and I write it down, it doesn't affect. The fingers don't become elevated. It doesn't affect the idea. The idea is still idea. It just went through the fingers because it had to be written down that way. So no, the learning is a learning. He learned, and learning is a mitzvah. Especially the fact that he did it inadvertently. He didn't mean to do it, right? He didn't especially learn with the koyach of thing, right? Okay. Then he says an unbelievable thing. He says, which is fascinating in its own right, which is a side thing. He says, Vafilu hu isur derabbanan. Even if it's a rabbinic prohibition. Even if it's a rabbinic prohibition. Now, this is a fascinating thing. First of all, this actually...
We transform nature.
Yeah, yeah. So let me explain to you. It's an unbelievable thing because, first of all, this itself is an amazing discussion in the Achreinim. In other words, in the great halachic analysts, there's actually a discussion about something that's treif midu araisa or something that's treif midu rabbanan, right? Is it gavra and chefza? So there are views that don't hold like this. There are views that say that something that's treif from the Torah, it's not only that you're not allowed to eat it, it is treif, right? Whereas something that's asa midu rabbanan, they want to say intrinsically it's still kosher, so you are prohibited from eating it. Right, which would change what he's saying here. The Alter Rebbe doesn't hold like that, and there's a Rabbi Yosef Engel, who's a great halachic analyst. He has a whole chapter on this. What he seems to prove is more in line with what it says here in Tanya. Right, the Alter Rebbe says that when something is made treif midrab rabbinically, that power of psak, the power of Torah, the power of ruling, can actually change the status of the thing itself. Amazing thing. By the way, it's also true in the Kedushin, in the reverse, but right? In other words, same thing. When the Rabbanan say we have to do a mitzvah, for example, they say you have to light Hanukkah candles, it changes the status of the candle. Even though it's not a mitzvah from the Torah, it's a mitzvah from the Rabbanan. Right? The same thing. So he says that even if something is Isser D'Rabbanan, that in other words, something that previously in other generations it would have been Klipas Noiga, would have been neutral Klipa. With all the consequences of neutral Klipa, as explained in the previous chapter, that it can be elevated if you eat it for the right reason, and if you don't, it goes down, but you can do Trevor, bring it up again, all this kind of stuff. As soon as the Rabbanan made a treif, right? As soon as the Rabbanan made a treif, it's not elevated all the more. It becomes Klipa, it becomes Klipas Atmeyas Lagamri.
But the mechanism.
What do you mean the mechanism?
Well, it didn't come from the backhanded.
No, but right now it's the same status.
It comes from energy by the backhanded root.
What do you mean?
It has the same status.
Right. And therefore all the consequences are the same, which means even the same thing they just said now, that it's usur and therefore it's bound up in klipa. So therefore what he says now still applies. If you ate it by mistake and you davened and learnt with it, it still cannot be elevated. Even though it's isur derabbanan.
And created differently.
But it became the same. It became Tzmeiros Lagami, became complete Isur because it was made Osir by the Rabbanan, so it's now trapped in Klipa. I mean, this goes, by the way, this whole discussion is a very fascinating discussion. I'll give you an interesting little thing and I'll tell you also an interesting story. Now, just go one more line, right? Shechamurim Divrei Soifrim. Chamurim Divrei Soifrim, because we know that things that are the Rabbanan are even more strict sometimes, midivrei Torah. This is a famous idea. That sometimes what's rabbinically forbidden, you know, some people say, oh, only the Rabbanan, it's only rabbinically forbidden. It's a huge mistake that. There are leniencies with the Isser, the Rabbanan, that is true. That's a general concept, right? We know that on Shabbos, everything, there's things that are forbidden midoraisa, forbidden, biblically forbidden, and things that are biblically, rabbinically forbidden, right? And there's often a tendency that people say, it's only the Rabbanan, it's not so important. That's a huge mistake. Why does the mistake come from? The mistake comes from like this, because there are things that are rabbinically forbidden which have leniency. So I'll give you an example. Al pi halacha, safek d'oraisa l'chumra. If something is d'oraisa, something is biblical, and it's in doubt whether you've done it or not. For example, let's say you're not sure if you heard shofar on first Rosh Hashanah, or you're not sure you heard it properly. Because it's d'oraisa, you have to hear it again. If it's the rabbanan, and you're not sure, you can be more maker, maybe you don't have to hear it again. I mean, you can, but you don't have to hear it again, right? And I'm giving you a very basic example. Why? Because we have a thing that suffix, when in doubt, if something is in doubt whether it's forbidden, if it's biblical, it's usur. You have to be machmir, you have to be strict. If it's rabbinic, you can be lenient. That's not because the isur the rabbanan is more lenient. It's because that's why it's designed for whatever reason. When the rabbanan made the mitzvah, they designed it that way with those leniencies embedded into it. That doesn't make it less strict. Because we're supposed to listen to the Rabbanan, this comes from the Torah. It's not a different Torah, it's the same Torah. Okay, that's number one. And not only that, but there's certain. So here it says, Chamurim Divrei Soifrim. Sometimes the Gemara tells us that what is rabbinically forbidden is even worse than what's biblically forbidden, right? Okay. I'll tell you an amazing story. But no, before I do that, there's also another, and just while we're talking about Isser D'Rabbanan, so there's another medrash, it doesn't say this word, it doesn't say Chamurim, it says Chavivin Divrei Soifrim. That what's rabbinically, mitzvahs which are rabbinically ordained, either prohibitions or mitzvahs, are more precious to Hashem. Something very special about the mitzvahs D'Rabbanan and the Isurim D'Rabbanan. Why? Because it comes from us. The mitzvahs Hashem gives, 630 mitzvahs Hashem gave it to us. Of course, we have to keep them. But what we created is created from Bnei Yisrael themselves, and therefore there's a certain preciousness in that. That's the whole explanation. I just wanted to mention that because that's an important thing. Okay. I'll tell you an amazing story, an incredible story. It happened in the time of Rabbi Akiva Eger. Rabbi Akiva Eger, I don't know if you've heard of him, Rabbi Akiva Eger was a huge Torah giant, an unbelievable Torah giant. And his forum were incredible, and he was immersed in Torah. I don't exactly the years, but he lived. I mean, you'll see from the story why that's relevant. He lived in the generation after the Alter Rebbe. He wasn't a Chassid. He wasn't from Chabad, but he was an unbelievable Torah giant. And he lived, he visited the Mittler Rebbe, and the Mittler Rebbe said a special maimer for him. Anybody was a generation after the Alter Rebbe. There was once a family that lived in his town. They had seven boys, I think, seven sons. And all of them were, just to give you a power also about why we say you are what you eat, and also this idea about the Rabbanan, which is fascinating. So, and how it affects a person sometimes also. So he was in his town, there was a family that had seven sons, and the first six were very, very matzliach, were very successful in terms of their, it was a real Torah family, they learned Torah, they connected to Torah, they were all men of stature, like, you know. And the youngest somehow was just, they couldn't get anywhere with him, just like, there was no way, he didn't like to learn, he couldn't absorb the thing, it was a very odd man, a very strange thing. And they went to Rabbi Akiva Eiger to ask him a question. What should they do? Like, why is it? All their children went through the same system of chinuch and all doing very well. And something's holding this child back. And Rabbi Akiva Eiger looked up and he said one sentence, which is a famous sentence. It wasn't his sentence. A sentence that comes somewhere. And he said, Ma'acholoi sasurois metamteim halei v'hamoyach. Non-kosher food blocks the head and the heart. That's a saying from Svarim. It's not his saying. And they went crazy because they couldn't understand. What does that mean? They were a family that were mamish, very strict. They were so strict, they never ate out of the house. Everything was only prepared at home. Everything was only done with, under their supervision. So where could have that child eaten not kosher food? Right? Listen to the story. It's an unbelievable story. So, again, by the way, I want to preface, the purpose of telling these stories is not to make us overwhelmed, to you know, things we can't reach, and to, right? It's to give us the goal and to give us inspiration to take one step towards the goal, right? I keep on saying that because I want to make people make the mistake that Tanya is very relevant, even though we're talking very high things. It's supposed to make an outlook, a perspective, and then a dent in how we behave. Okay. Anyway, so they decided they have to research this to understand what happened here. So they sat down with the child and they interrogated him a bit. And they tried to bring out to him, like, was there any time that he ate out of the house? Until he said, yeah, there was. What happened? One time he was walking in the street and he was incredibly, no, but this is unbelievable. He was incredibly hungry. He noticed that there's a chasan happening in a particular hall. And he walked in, a chasan, a frum wedding, kosher, the whole thing. And he walked in, and he was mamish very angry, and he asked for a piece of food, and someone gave him a piece of meat to eat. And he ate it. Okay, that's another thing. So they ran to the hall, and they got the manager of the hall, and they said, you remember when this wedding, and such a day, and they checked out what day it was. He says, yeah, it was a hall, it was 100% kosher, everything's 100% fine. He says, do you know who the shoichet was of that wedding? Anyway, eventually they tracked down the shoichet. They go to the shoichet looks like a really pious guy. Beard, payas, knows the laws of shchita. So what can be wrong? So they start to speak about the shaykhit. They start to talk to the shaykhit about, does he remember this and this wedding? And suddenly he becomes very sad. And he says, he doesn't remember the wedding. And this is the story. Because he didn't even know. The story was like this. There was a whole story about a guy that got divorced. And there was a get. And a shayla came with a get. It's a shayla. Something happened with the get, it was written properly, it was a whole shayla, the get's kosher or not. And there was a big, big machloek, because there was some rabbanim who said the get's fine, but there were other very, very great leaders that said it was not fine. And the Alter Rebbe had written a tshuva, it's printed tshuva, actually in the, you can see the tshuva, he had written a responsa that the get is no good and the person needs another get. That, right? The person needs another get. And the Alter Rebbe said, that I'm making a gzeira, that Alter Rebbe said, wrote in his tshuva, that I want anyone to know that if the husband or the wife remarries without getting another get, the food in that wedding is not kosher. If the shoichet should know that he's shechting a meat, that's not kosher. And this shoichet says, I didn't know about the whole story, and the guy did go get remarried, he didn't have another get, and I shechted for that wedding. And that's what affected this child's learning. So they ran back to the altar of Kivega and they said, okay, we've cracked, we've decoded the problem, we understand what happened over here, what should we do? And he told him you have to be extra special. He gave him the whole system what to do, and tshuva, and to be extra special in kashrus. And taka the child was matzliach, and he was fine. And he was successful, and he learned, and everything was okay. I thought of this maisa. I always knew this maisa, but I thought of this maisa because this is the power of isur derabanan, right? The power of psak. How Torah changes the world, like I said, Torah changes nature. So isur derabanan, even though the thing was klipas noiga, but it became like mamash klipa. Okay, mamash treif. And therefore it affected the person, right? I'll just tell you one other insight, which is what we're talking about there. Yeah. Change that food. That food was mamash a problem. No one knew about it at the wedding, obviously. But it was the Alter Rebbe was trying to hold back the possibility of getting married again. So, and it just happened that the Sheikh didn't know about it. I mean, it was a public thing. Everyone knew about it, but I guess the Sheikh didn't know about it. Otherwise, he wouldn't have shechted. Right? Anyway. So these things are amazing. I'll tell you an interesting thing, like, right? So how this plays out a little bit. So, you know, and how psak halacha works. There's a bit of a tangent I'm going on, but this is a very interesting thing and I want to share with you. So, you know, there's certain things that in the time of the Gemara were a machloikus, right? Beshamai, Besila, Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Meir, and so on, right? So how does it work, right? How does it work in those days? So let's talk first halachically and then we'll talk spiritually. So halachically, what used to happen is there were certain times, especially after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, where there was big communities of Torah, but the Sanhedrin had somehow fallen apart, and therefore the centralization of resolving issues had fallen apart, right? Because there was always machlek, there was always a difference of opinion, but it used to be there was a central Sanhedrin. They would go to, there was a shaila, a new thing, they would go to Sanhedrin. There'd be different opinions, and you'd vote, and you'd follow the majority, and it was all done, right? There was no lingering halachic disputes. They were quickly resolved. But after the second Beis HaMikdash, and especially during the time of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, it became Shammai and Hillel, and Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, and they started the whole process of machlekes. And sometimes those different opinions would take a long time to be resolved. So you had two communities. So what did you do? How did you paskin? The answer is very simple. If you belong to Beis Shammai's camp, if you're Beis Shammai's Talmud, then you paskin like Beis Shammai. If you had Beis Hillel, you paskin like Beis Hillel. There were two communities, right? There were two communities. Until they would vote, eventually they'd have a convention, a conference, they'd vote, and the halacha would be established. And then Torah, the power of Psak, which was normally Beis Hillel, the halacha was normally Beis Hillel, it became, this is us, this is mut, right? By the way, we have similar things nowadays. Nowadays we have still unresolved halachic disputes, like the moment of death, and all these different things are unresolved things, and you follow your rov, you follow the community that you belong to. That's what Hashem wants. If it's unresolved, you have to have a rov, a community, and you follow that community. Okay. One interesting example of this is like this. We know that midoraisa, right? Midoraisa, you can't have meat and milk, but you could have chicken and milk, biblically speaking, right? You can't have, rabbinically, chicken and milk is treif, midrabanan, which would fit into what he's saying over here. Say someone had a mixture of chicken and cheese, that would be treif, even though it's only drabanan. However, this wasn't always the case. There was a machlekes about this. There was a machlekes between Rabbi Yossi and his colleagues. Rabbi Yossi held that there's nothing wrong, even midrabanan. He did not subscribe to the rabbinic decree of eating poultry, in other words, and milk, right? The rest of them did. So while there was an unresolved dispute, you had in Klal Yisrael two customs. The people who lived in the town of Rabbi Yossi ate chicken and cheese sandwiches, right? People who were outside of Yossi's town didn't. Okay? Now there's a halachic analysis on this in the Gemara, why that is, what they were worried about, whatever the reason is. In Chassidus and in Kabbalah, it explains the very spiritual thing behind all this. Because at the end of the day, chicken and cheese it's klipah, it's not klipah. What kind of, you know, there's different levels of, but is treif, it's not treif. Like, how can you have in the same time? In Tel Aviv, it's treif, and in Tzipori, it's not treif. Like, what does this mean? So they say like this, at a certain time, that there's shades of klipah. In Rabbi Yossi's town, what's the idea of isur and not and heter? We say it before. Isur means something that's bound up with klipah, and you cannot elevate it. Right? When the Rabbanah make an isur, they attach something to the world of klipah, and it's now deep embedded in klipah, and you cannot elevate it. But in Rabbi Yossi's town, they're on a higher, much higher much higher level. And the potential for klipa of meat and milk, they were able to elevate. Not meat and milk, I mean chicken and milk, right? They were able to elevate. And they were able to elevate, therefore it was mutter. Whereas everywhere else it was different madrega, therefore they weren't able to do it, it became osur. Then eventually everyone was in lower madrega, so it was when halacha became established, because no one is able to elevate it now. And that's what they put the status in. It's just interesting how they can also vary from place to place in terms of psak. Okay. Good. Now it's like this. So therefore, now he goes like on a bit of a tangent and says a different topic. He says like this. Lochei. So I'll just tell you one more short story. I hope you don't mind. We fabricate a little bit over here. Right? Famous story that the Rebbe told in the first Maimer that he said. You know, it took a year till the Rebbe officially accepted the Nasius, the leadership, right? And the way that the Rebbe accepted the leadership was to say a Maimer, a Hasidic discourse, and it's a very famous first Maimer that the Rebbe said. In that Maimer, was a very special Maimer. He mentioned a teaching from every Rebbe. They sang a Nigun from every Rebbe, and the Rebbe told the story of every Rebbe. So the story of the Rebbe Marash was like this. The Rebbe Marash, the story was that there was one time the Rebbe Marash traveled to Paris with a view to him, and he booked in himself into a hotel that was a very, very expensive hotel that wasn't frequented by Chassidim with long beards, you know what I'm saying? Put it that way. Right? There was a casino there, it was like a grub hotel. Well, Rebbe Marash came in and he booked himself in the hotel. In the hotel itself, he booked himself into the most expensive floor. What happened? Why did he do that? Because in that floor, there was someone who came from a very, very Hasidic family, a very, very devout family, and he had lost his way completely. And he had gone off the way, and he was now involved in it. It was in the hotel, he was there to party, to marry, to gamble, to... And as he was there, the Rebbe Marash walked into his room, or walked into where he was in the hotel. The Marash only came there for one night. He walked into the hotel, he looked at this Chassid, or ex-Chassid, and he said to him, young man, Yayin Nesech is Matamtim Halev V'Amoyach. Non-kosher wine blocks the mind and heart. And he walked out. This guy got such a fright that it completely became like what they call in Yiddish tzatresel, like he was like completely shaken up. And he went looking for the Rebbe Marash. Apparently the Rebbe Marash and him spent time together in a room secluded for a couple of hours. And then the Rebbe Marash came out and he left. This guy, the complete shuvah, and a whole complete Hasidic family came out of it. So again, same idea, that the food has an effect, and you are what you eat. But the other part of the story is that you can get out of it, right? Both stories. Doesn't define you. In other words, it's in you, it has an effect on you, but it doesn't define you. You can always come back. You can always rise above the effects of what's in him. Anyway. Okay, let's go further. Now he says like this. He says, because we say, right? In other words, what have we established here? We established it like this. So when a person eats something that is osur, it's not just that he's doing something wrong. The thing that he's engaged in, the thing that he's doing itself is a wrong thing. It's klippa. It's a piece of klippa. That's the uniqueness of food, right? In other words, sometimes a person does something that's wrong. For example, let's say a person does a chas v'sholom, lights a fire on Shabbos, let's say, right? Nothing intrinsically wrong in lighting a fire, right? The fire is not treif, you know what I'm saying? It's the experience that is problem. But with food, it's different. Eating treif food is not just the experience of eating that is klippa here, it's the thing itself is klippa. That's the chidush here in this chapter, right? So he says like this, therefore, v'lochein gama yetzahara v'koyacha mis'avel ledvarim asurim, therefore, even the yetzahara and the desire to eat things that are not kosher, who shade mishadi nuchroin. It's an expression. It's like a shade means like a ghost that comes from a foreign, it's a foreign power. Shu yetzer hara shal umma sa'ilam. It's the yetzahara that comes from the world. It's not a Jewish yetzahara. This is an interesting topic that he introduces now. Shenafso shem mishlolish klippas hatmeis. Because it's coming from the outside world, which is part of the klippas hatmeis, which is proper klippa. What does it mean? So he's actually introducing a very interesting concept about what a yid is, right? We have a yetzahara, correct? We have a yetzahara to do two types of things. One yetzahara we have is the Yetzirah to do things which are permissible, just indulgent, like we spoke about before, right? So that's the Yetzirah to be materialistic, the Yetzirah to eat indulgently, eat for the wrong reasons, and so on and so forth, right? Or to engage in any type, any desire, but it's still kosher. Right? And then there's the Yetzirah to do things that are intrinsically wrong, to transgress the 613 mitzvahs. Now, the Rebbe says that the Yetzirah to do things that are mutter, in other words, to engage in things which are klipas noiga, in the wrong way, thereby bringing it down, but still elevatable through tshuva and so on, that's a Jewish Yetzirah. In other words, the Yetzirah to engage in things which are klipas noiga is the Yetzirah which comes from klipas noiga. Right? The Yetzirah that we have to do an Aveira, that's not a Jewish Yetzirah altogether. A Yid, by definition, intrinsically doesn't want to do these things. Because we're not from that world. So how does it happen? So in other words, so where does it come from? It's a foreign Yetzirah. The Yetzirah coming from those people that have a Nefesh HaBamis that is Klippas HaTameis Lagamri. It's pure Klippa. From the world, from the areas of the world that are pure Klippa. That's where it comes from. So the question is, right? The question is, he doesn't say this outright, he doesn't say this properly here, but so then where did the Yetzirah come from? Right? Where does it come from? If I suddenly have this desire to eat something that's not kosher, to break Shabbos, to talk Lashon Hara, whatever, right? Where does that come from, the Yetzirah? Because here we see the power also of what he was speaking about before in Perek Zayin. It came because we start off with the Jewish Yetzirah. So what is that? What happens like this? We start off with the Jewish Yetzirah, which is a natural Yetzirah. That's the struggle we should be having. In other words, what he's trying to say is that really, a Jew has a struggle. We have a struggle between the Nefesh HaKis and Nefesh HaBamis. That's the whole Tanya is like that, right? But the struggle really is not supposed to be in Averis, really. In other words, ideally, in terms of transgression, the Klipa Atzmeis Legamri, we shouldn't be having a struggle. It's not even us. Which Yid wants to do an Averis, right? The only struggle we should be having, and that's what we're born to struggle with, is the struggle of doing something that are mutter, right? Just in the wrong way. That's the indulgent Yetzirah of Klipas Noiga, which is the Jewish Yetzirah. So the question is, but how, so then, where does it come from? So where does the Yetzirah come from? The answer is that we start with the Jewish Yetzirah. We start with the Yetzirah of indulgence. We indulge. What do? We indulge, and we all do this, and we indulge in things which are mutter, but we indulge in a very, very non-kadusha way. So it's purely for enjoyment, purely for materialism, purely for taiva, whatever the case is, right? And we learned before what happens. We temporarily, at least, downgrade what we've eaten or what we've engaged in from the level of klipas noiga to klipas atmeres lagamri, to proper klipa. And now we have in our goof, as you said before, our body now is harboring klipas, proper klipa. Temporary proper klipa, but it's proper klipa. As soon as we start harboring proper klipa, we've now welcomed in a non-Jewish Yetzirah. That's where the non-Jewish Yetzirah comes from. Right? What's the point of telling us this? The point of telling us this is that it's not just like two different things. It's not like he's telling... It affects our general mitzvahs. In other words, the more refined we become, that's what he's trying to say really, right? The more we refine, and that's why Tanya has such an emphasis on this, right? The more materialistic we become, the more megushim we become, the more steeped in gashmis we become, the more we invite the potential for the foreign Yetzirah. And therefore it affects our general keeping of mitzvahs. It lowers our level of Yirat Shamayim, right? In other words, if a Yid builds, because what part of living as a Yid means, we build not just we do the right thing, but we build a sensitivity to the right thing. Right? We build a resistance to doing something wrong. We build a resistance to eat something we shouldn't eat, or doing a very that we shouldn't do, or to make sure, whatever the resistance is, right? And that's a certain refinement that we're supposed to do. That's part of how we live. We refine ourselves and we become allergic almost, on some level, to doing things that are wrong. The problem is that it goes together with the other stuff. In other words, if we overindulge, a person says, yeah, no, I'm going to be 100% frum. Right? I'm going to have Yiras Shemayim, I'm going to be the best tefillin and the best mezuzah and everything, right? But I'm going to have a party life like no other. Oh, the best hashra, of course. But just complete indulgence, right? It doesn't work because you become, what happens is, besides the problems of doing that itself and downgrading it and klipas noig and all that kind of stuff, but you also now invite, you're temporarily harboring now klipas atmeis lagamri, and therefore you're becoming less resistant to doing the wrong thing because you're inviting more and more of the foreign yetzer. Again, we all do this, we all indulge what we shouldn't do, but it's the idea of having this mindset and a little bit learning to have discipline, a little bit learning to be more refined and more edel and more, right? Which really goes back to the mitzvah of Torah. There's a mitzvah of Torah which people misunderstand, right? There's a huge value. I'm saying, this is like living as a year. It's also about our value system, right? Living as, I'm not saying we're not all on Madrega, rich the masmid, right? So I don't know if we eat, if we eat lunch, we're not going to add in a little bit of spice that we enjoy. Okay, that's fine. We're not anywhere near that Madrega anyways, right? But
three tubs of ice cream might be overdoing
it. Yeah, exactly. But also, it's not just the heat of ice cream, it's also the flashiness and the whole materialism, which unfortunately is going on today a lot, right? And it's against Torah way, it's against Torah values. There's a pasuk in the Torah, Hatznei lechasim Hashem alakecha. You should walk modestly with Hashem your God, right? The whole social media culture, it's a very bad culture now. Like, modesty doesn't only mean, you know, clothing, which means also, and men, you know, it doesn't only mean women, it means men also. It's everything, but it means a way of life. It's about being, it's about undertoning the gashmius. That's what it is, right? We all, there's nothing wrong in having a comfortable environment, a nice environment, a clean environment, and it looks nice. All that is all good. It's about what importance it plays in our life and how obsessed we are with it, how involved we are with it. That's the kind of thing we should take out of that, I think, right? So that's the, and it's a big value. Why is it such a value? Because that downtoning, or toning down, I should say, the depth and the steep, being steeped in the material, even if it's 100% kosher and best hechsher and all good, right? It affects our general Yiras Hashamayim. It affects our general Yetzer Hara for doing other things that we really shouldn't do. Because we become less refined. And we invite more and more into the foreign Yetzer Hara into us, right? That's what he's saying. He said, Mashayin came because he says Mashayin, because he says that, so that, therefore that, because the food itself is Mamash Klippa, therefore even the desire to do it is a foreign Yetzer Hara. Mashayin came a Yetzer Hara v'koyach ha-mis'al v'varam mutarim. But the Yetzer Hara that, and the power of desire for kosher things, just to have taiva to the full your desires, who's shade m'shade in yudo? And that's the Jewish ghost, that's the Jewish Yetzer Hara. Why? Because even if you do it and you do the wrong thing and you indulge, but because of klipas noga, you can re-elevate it afterwards to kedusha. We said before, because it was klipas noga, you can bring it back to kedusha if you do tshuva and you sort of recalibrate your life, kind of thing. All right. There was something else that was very important here that I wanted to share with you. Okay, now we'll stop you. Okay.
Thank you.